This reading is from Rays of the One Light by Swami Kriyananda. Truth is one and eternal. Realize oneness with it in your deathless self within. The following commentary is based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. The promise of the scriptures. In the Gospel of St. Luke chapter 15, we read the famous parable of the prodigal son. Jesus tells of the man who took the wealth bestowed upon him by his father and squandered it in foreign lands, where he fell into evil ways. At last, repentant, he returned to his father's home. When his father saw him, he was, Jesus tells us, moved with compassion and ran and fell upon his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee. I am no longer worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Fetch quickly the best robe and put it on him, and give him a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet, and bring out the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and make merry. Because this my son was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and is found, and they began to make merry. Small-hearted human beings, identified as they are with their little egos, give exaggerated importance to any slight that they've received from others. Thus, they imagine God, like them, to be petty, unpardoning, and vindictive. In God's eyes, however, when human beings go astray, there is nothing to forgive. All of us are aspects only of his own self. He who made us resides in us. He is not far away from us in some far-off heaven. His call to us always is to return to our own home within. The way of return is described in the Bhagavad Gita in the 6th chapter. Supreme blessedness is that yogi's who has completely calmed his mind, controlled his ego-active tendencies, rajas, and purged himself of desire, thereby attaining oneness with Brahma, the Infinite Spirit. Thus, through Holy Scripture, God has spoken to mankind. Om, Om, Om.
This parable of the prodigal son is perhaps one of the most important in the Bible and is, of course, often quoted and very well known. And the implications of it from the point of view of self-realization are extremely important. In the reading today, we sort of started in the middle of the story. And so let me back up a little bit, because not all of us have spent our childhood memorizing Bible verses, so we don't necessarily know everything that comes before. But the story is that there's two sons, and one says to the father, "Give me my inheritance now." Instead of wanting to wait, I want to take it and use it. So he took all the wealth that his father had to give him, and he went off to foreign lands. Presumably the other son just stayed home. But this lad went off to foreign lands, and he took all the money that he had, all the apparent power, that wealth that was simply given to him, that was unearned, and he dissipated it in loose living, is how it's described in the Bible, until he found himself impoverished, and simultaneously, as these things happen, a terrible famine hit the land, the foreign land in which he was living, and he'd already squandered his inheritance, and then there was a vast shortage in the land itself, and gradually he became more and more hungry and poor. And so he teamed up with a companion, and they went and hired themselves out to a farmer, is how the story is told. And the job he was given was to feed the pigs, the swine. So he kept feeding the swine, and he desired to eat of that which the swine were eating. except that the farmer who owned the feed did not offer it to him. And finally it occurred to him, in these direst of circumstances, he says, in my father's house, even the hired men eat better than I do. They're better taken care of than I am here. Let me go back to my father and at least take the position of being a hired servant, and then I'll be better off than I am. And then he goes back with this great realization of how he's taken all this from his father and wasted it away and come to such a sorry pass. And he expects that his father will treat him unkindly, and all he hopes to beg from him is a crumb, because he's been humbled now. But instead, as the story is taken up in our reading today, as soon as his father sees him coming, his father doesn't think harshly and judgmentally of all the ways in which his son has disappointed him or failed him. He just looks at him with love as his very own, and far from just giving him a position in the servants' quarters, he welcomes him back even more than before, because now he has wandered and returned, and the father's rejoicing is even greater. Now the image of this is so clear and so utterly important, because based upon how we understand this story is a tremendous amount of how we understand our own lives. I remember Devi was telling us, she's a woman who is one of the leaders of Ananda, and for a number of years she was responsible for teaching this month-long training course that was held at Ananda Village. And it was supposed to be about the yoga teachings and about the 14 steps course of Kriyananda and the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, and there was this huge curriculum, this great big fat notebook of curriculum and all the Sanskrit words and all these different things that you needed to know in order to be qualified in all these different ways. And so she studied hard and had all these outlines that she was going to present. But she said, over teaching that course month after month, that she gradually realized that her purpose, God's purpose in having her teach that course, was very different than she thought it was at first. Because for every person who came in front of her, she looked into their eyes and saw, here is an angel of God, a child of the divine, with a deep desire to experience that love. And yet in the eyes of all of them is this thought that I am not worthy and I would not be welcomed by God as I desire to be welcomed. And she saw that her only job was to help people to understand that God loves them just as they are. And this great, enormous game that we play of all the ways in which, as the prodigal son says, oh, Father, I have sinned. I have sinned against you. I have sinned against heaven. And what is the father's response? To welcome him back even more lavishly. Now, don't misunderstand. It's not as if we don't sin, to use that biblical word, against the Father in heaven. But the one we are really sinning against at all times is only and always our own happiness. There's no person who is as small-minded as we are. And one of the reasons that all of the scriptures emphasize the enormous importance of kindness, and when Jesus was asked, of all the commandments, what are the greatest commandments? And he said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, and with all thy soul. And you know, every week in our Festival of Light, we say that, with all my heart, with all my mind, with all my strength, with all my soul, I choose thy love. That's how we've phrased it now. I choose love above all things. And that was Jesus' commandment. The greatest commandment is to love God with every part of yourself. And then the second commandment, Jesus said, which is almost the same as the first, is thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And when Yogananda interprets that, he emphasizes that it's not merely that you should love your neighbor as thyself, but you should love your neighbor because he is yourself. And Jesus says further that the first commandment and the second commandment are really the same commandment, because it is the divine spirit that shines out from the eyes of all. Everything that was made, the Gospel of St. John says, was made of God. There's nothing that is outside of divinity. And there's not one soul living who is less a child of God. as Yogananda said so emphatically to one of his disciples, who was feeling that sense of unworthiness, oh, and somehow I haven't pleased God. And Yogananda looked at him very sternly into his eyes and said, remember, God loves you just as much as he loves me or Krishna or Christ or any of the great masters. He is our common Father. But that's extraordinary to contemplate, because every one of us with some part of our mind believes that God is more pleased and therefore more loving with some of these great souls who did such a good job compared to the job, well, that we're doing, right? We just can't help but feel that way. But that in itself is the whole measure of our delusion. And one of the reasons that Christ and the others emphasize the need for us to be kind is because if we can experience in our own life, if we can regard others with kindness and love, it begins to teach us that such a reality is possible. Because we can only ever see in the world to the capacity of our own of ourselves. Swamiji often joked, he said, if you put a turtle in front of the Mona Lisa, the turtle's really not going to be able to sort of feel the subtleties of the great artistic achievement of Leonardo da Vinci. If he's awake at all, he'll probably crawl forward and try to eat it. And if it's not edible, he'll lose interest in it, because that poor turtle just doesn't have the capacity to tune in to the subtlety that's there. And of course, we may not try to eat the Mona Lisa, but nonetheless, we look around at this world and we basically see the limits of our own consciousness in it. If we expect people to be vengeful, I mean, if we are vengeful ourselves, we expect vengeance. If we're small-minded and always thinking that our feelings are being hurt, that's what we think everybody else is doing. If we're kind and forgiving, then we begin to create an understanding that kindness and forgiveness is possible. If we can experience it within ourselves, then we begin to believe it's possible. And so it's an exercise that Jesus has given us, to love thy neighbor as thyself, to love one another as if God himself were present in one another. That which ye do to the least of me, of these, Jesus said, to the poor, to the downtrodden, to the imprisoned. When you feed and take care of them, Jesus told his disciples, you're feeding me. They didn't understand. They were confused by what he was saying. But what he was saying is, if you act in this way, if you see God everywhere, then you begin to change your understanding even of what God is. And when we begin to think and live in a world of kindness and forgiveness, then when we ourselves need forgiveness, then we expect it to be there. I often joke with friends of mine. I remember many years ago when we were living in these very funky little trailers, and many years ago at Ananda Village, and Shivani, a friend of mine, became ill, and she had a high fever, and she was always very much into the total natural method. So she had some obscure sort of natural methods, all these obscure methods that were created before you could just take an aspirin to take fever down. But she wanted me to, you know, do cold compresses and herbs and all these different things. So I spent quite a lot of time sort of ministering to her while she went through this high fever. And she was saying many times, oh, thank you, Asha, I'm so glad that you're helping me. And I jokingly, I said, it's just money in the bank as far as I'm concerned, Shivani, you know, because I'll take care of you and you'll take care of me later on, and I know it's true. But I say that as a joke, but it's not a joke, because if we respond with kindness, we activate many, many realities, not the least of it, which is we activate the law of magnetism. In a very real sense, my kindness to Shivani has been repaid to me 1,000 times by the divine law of karma, where the energy that we put out magnetizes energy back to us. But also, it impressed upon my mind the fact that when we suffer, kindness is the response. And we may not think it's that important, but when we ourselves are pressed up against the wall, I was in a great deal of mental difficulty not too long ago, and I was trying to pray to Divine Mother to be kind to me, and yet I felt that my situation was self-induced, and it was my own, quote, weaknesses that had created it. And I felt this profound block between my prayer and its fulfillment. And somehow I felt cut aside from Divine Mother's compassion. And I noticed that, and I thought to myself, why is this? And I just knew immediately, because when confronted with other people's weaknesses, I am not always sympathetic. And so suddenly, when I needed that vibration, I couldn't find that vibration because I myself didn't know how to express it. Now, it seems so sort of self-involved when you talk like that, and it's really much more of a divine flow. That's why we play this game, which is so marvelous. Of, on one hand, we have the Bhagavad Gita, which just sort of talks so definitely, how do we attain this relationship by controlling the restless mind and by overcoming the ego? And sort of all the energy gets turned back into this yogic attitude of strength and determination, and that's what we need. And then we have Jesus talking about the prodigal son coming back, and we have this whole image, and we have God the Father coming out, and yet both are always true. Because what we experience in ourselves, we have to understand. We have to understand the divine. We have to have access to it from something that we already know. We have to build from where we are. We get very, very confused if we imagine that we can just sort of have this abstraction and somehow get right to it. The spirituality of our own lives is made out of the little increments of who we are right now. Swamiji made that remark once. He was talking about a certain spiritual teacher whose reputation he felt was overrated. And he stated it by saying that that man's idea of spirituality is something entirely separate from what life is really about. And what life is really about is just exactly who we are. And our ability to have access to the divinity within us is a great deal about believing that it's possible. And by expressing it, we can also experience it. Yogananda made that statement, which is such a profoundly true one. He says, the channel is blessed by that which flows through it. Even the channel is defined by that which flows through it. Who we are is not anything fixed. That's the funniest thing about it, you know? You can have somebody who's a terrible, terrible person, and if they undergo some kind of a conversion and begin to act differently, they suddenly become a wonderful person. I mean, what was the terrible person? Did they have bad elbows or bad knees, you know, or bad shoulders? What is it? It's just merely the energy that flows through us. That's all we ever are. And what we experience, all we ever experience is the energy that flows through us. You know, if you're trapped, if we're trapped in a bad mental state, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on around us at all. You can be sitting right next to a person who's having a blissful experience, and you can be having a horrible experience. And you're both in the same place, looking at the same four walls, listening to the same speaker. All we ever experience is the consciousness that's flowing through us. And when we get trapped in these sort of narrow, dark alleyways, if we take the inheritance from our father and squander it in loose living, you know, we think we're enjoying ourselves when we're acting against our inner nature because we're spending our divine connection. You know, we have a certain amount of inherent vitality and joy, especially that begins with youth. And we think we're having a good time. We're drinking and we're carousing. We're making a lot of noise. We're being just rowdy and inconsiderate, and we think it's just so much fun like that. But what we're spending is our divine inheritance. We're spending the vitality of this life. And gradually, when we move so far away that we no longer feel connected, when we've lost that divine connection, then all of a sudden those same things, the famine comes. And there's just, it's all spent. There's nothing more to eat. And Yogananda describes that the part of the parable where Jesus is feeding the swine is when he's just trying to sort of give energy to his bad habits. Not Jesus, excuse me, the prodigal son is feeding the swine. The swine are like his bad habits and all of the ways in which he's acting contrary to the divine image within him. And he keeps feeding them. And they're taking all his energy and giving him nothing in return. And he thinks, you know, I could have some of that energy back for myself. I don't have to keep feeding all these bad habits. And it's not just a question of loose living. It's just bad mental attitudes of fear, of resentment, or of a Swamiji writes in that, of the human being, the ego is so sensitive. Anytime we're not honored in just the right way, oh, we take it so seriously. We think that the whole world should just rally around and sort of tell us how wonderful we are, you know. But it doesn't, does it? Swamiji also made a very interesting comment in his expanded commentary. He said, we don't like to suffer, and yet we're really grateful when the karmic scale is balanced, because our soul knows. Our soul knows when we have squandered our divine inheritance, and we're glad when we're going to be pulled back. We're glad when the false way of living dies out and we have to come back to the love and the joy and the true freedom, which is our divine inheritance. We don't like the suffering. We complain like crazy. We think we don't want it. But the soul rejoices. It is the strangest thing. The soul rejoices. And you look at a life and that seems so hard and so full of tragedy, and yet after we die, we look at it and say, oh, that was a good effort. That was a good effort. Look how much of a challenge I faced. Look how hard I tried. We're glad when it happens, because we want to be corrected. Just like a child may rebel like crazy when you discipline them. But if you discipline them truly and appropriately, they're grateful in their souls. They're grateful in their hearts and in their minds, because now they know the direction that they ought to go. And so God takes care of us in this way. He gives us our inheritance. He allows us to squander it. And then when we get hungry and we say, Lord, you've got to show me. I've been out here doing this so long on my own. I just don't know which way is right. And then we begin to hear without any trace of reproach. You know, that was what's so sweet about this story, which is so profoundly worth meditating on. I've sinned against you and against God, the son says. The father doesn't respond at all. The father doesn't say, yeah, that's true. You caused me a lot of trouble. Nothing. He just says, bring the robe, bring the jewels, bring the best that's in the house. Let us rejoice that you've found wisdom. That's all that matters. That's what Swamiji and Master say to us over and over again. Don't give a single thought to anything that you've done incorrectly. We spend so much time focusing on all our faults, thinking somehow that that matters. Just pay attention, Master said, to how much you love God. And if you only love God a tiny bit, then just pay attention to that. Because everything else ultimately just fades into nothing. All of the profligate years of the prodigal son meant nothing at all. He was fully restored to his father's house, and so will we be, as soon as we ask. All we have to do is turn our attention. Divine Mother, I have wandered. I have been so foolish and angry and egoic and resentful and deprived in thousands of ways. I imagined all these things to be true, but now I'm done with that. Yogananda says, be Divine Mother's naughty baby. She says, we sit in the playpen and we cry. She tosses a toy in. And if that contents us, then she doesn't give us anything more. But whatever toy she sends us, we must continue to throw them out of the crib and continue to scream. That's what Master says. Be Divine Mother's naughty baby and say, nothing will content me anymore except you. And then she comes and picks us up. And all that we were looking for and wasting our time, we suddenly find is right here, right within us. Divine Mother's love, always just waiting for us to turn our attention, open our hearts, and receive it.
Then three wise men came from afar, guided by the heavenly star. Christ, the light of God, had descended, that receiving him all might be saved. Thus the promise of God was maintained. Thus all true souls were called to the light, that their darkness be lifted, that their hearts be made whole. When Mary's babe smiled, he conveyed truth and grace. that their darkness be lifted, that their hearts be made whole. When Mary's babe smiled, he conveyed truth and grace. Then three wise men came from afar, guided by the heavenly star. Then three wise men came from afar, guided by the heavenly star. Christ, the light of God, had descended. Christ, the light of God, had come, that receiving him, all might be saved. Three wise men came, guided by a star, to give honor and welcome the Christ born on earth. Three wise men came, guided by a star, to give honor